You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Bears. Yes, welcome back. It feels good to be your host, Lauren Cox, once again. And I'm glad to be back here on the Locked On Podcast Network, bringing you your daily Chicago Bears talk. It's been a little bit since I've been able to say that, and in case you missed it, the future here of Locked On Bears was a little bit up in the air, but fear not. We are picking back up here where we left off. I'm not going to bore you with the details of technical changes and a little bit of contractual wiggle room in the background with my work, but just know I am back here for the foreseeable future. We're going to take you through the offseason and beyond and keep the daily Chicago Bears analysis going here. Did you miss me? I missed you, don't worry. I missed talking Bears, so I'm glad to be back. Still going to keep things going with my background with Pro Football Focus here. Going to feature plenty of their data on the podcast, as always. And I'm still rolling strong over at Bears Wire, part of that USA Today sports media group. The reason why I bring that up is because today I want to dive a little bit deeper into the last thing I wrote over at Bears Wire here this week, looking at the biggest buzzword in the NFL right now. That's the run-pass option, RPO. I'm sure you've heard about it. If you watched any of the Eagles' championship run, if you tuned into Super Bowl 52, I'm sure you heard plenty about it. Chris Collinsworth, in particular, did not pass up a single opportunity to mention the RPOs on the broadcast.
We used to call it the run-pass option, but now in the vernacular, RPO.
Yeah, and basically all it means is the quarterback has the option. He's going to look at a linebacker or a safety or somebody, and they have gone to that and basically decided that Nick Foles is just so much better running that offense than what he was before. So during the bye week, he was able to make the conversion, and we see the Patriots, they have struggled a bit against it.
Now, if you don't know, Chris Collinsworth is actually a part owner of Pro Football Focus. He is my boss, and he's a great guy, and I love him, but he didn't necessarily do a great job there in the broadcast explaining what RPOs exactly are and how they apply in the Eagles offense. So I'm going to try and do a better job here, and I think, you know, not when you're not on live TV with millions of people in front of you and three producers talking in your ear the whole time, it's easier to kind of slow it down and break it down piece by piece. But I know when he's got 15 seconds and a countdown going in his ear and someone's saying, okay, graphic two, graphic three, trying to explain it all, it can be a little bit tough, and you're jumbling over your words maybe and trying to get certain things across and apply it to the broadcast. So I know Chris has a tough job broadcasting the Super Bowl, and it can be hard to get into a lot of X's and O's and NFL details, so I want to try and break it down a little bit more simply and smoothly here on the podcast. To help us better understand RPOs, run-pass options, we need to make sure we differentiate RPOs from play action. And everybody knows what play action is. If you ever played a game of Madden, you run it all the time. It was first came out in like the 1960s when they finally realized that, hey, you can fake a handoff and then throw the ball, and it's actually pretty effective. I mean, the key is obviously making it look like you're running. So those interior defenders, those linebackers, players near the line of scrimmage, they step up to try and defend the run, creating more space behind them for receivers to get open. It's all about that mindset of running to set up the pass. But, you know, when you watch play action, if you watch the offensive line, they really tell you what's happening on the play. I mean, on play action, the offensive line is pass blocking. I mean, they have to protect the quarterback. The offensive line is never necessarily fully selling the run. I mean, occasionally, offensive lines will work in a different type of pass set, where maybe their first step will be towards the defender to make that first step kind of look like the run. But after that first step, they immediately come back into normal pass protection because they know the pass rushers across from them are trying to get after the quarterback. And so even though it's an attempt to sell that run fake, the whole offensive line doesn't necessarily do so. And I know, you know, like the linebackers and defensive backs, they still have to keep their eyes on the running backs and, you know, the receivers and whoever they're trying to cover. But peripherally, as a linebacker, you can kind of see what the offensive line is doing. You can kind of get that feel, and the best linebackers don't bite on play action in part because of their ability to see the offensive line and get a feel for what play action looks like in opposing offenses. And so obviously play action is a staple of every NFL offense. You know, Pro Football Focus tracks it. We track everything over there. And, you know, when you look across the NFL, you kind of get a span of how much teams run play action. You know, you have teams like the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger. They were down more around 10% of their passing plays had that fake play action handoff to the running back. And you go at the other end of the spectrum, Jared Goff and the Rams were right up around 30% of their pass play. So you're looking anywhere from 10 to 30%. It's not even close to every pass play. It's not even every other pass play. Sometimes it's every four pass plays. You see a spectrum there in that range, but it's enough to keep the defense honest. And I know a lot of that, it's football 101. It's pretty obvious stuff. You get that, like I said, playing Madden, you know how play action works, but it's important to keep that sort of on the top of your mind, keep it fresh here when we talk about RPO, so you can kind of see the similarities and differences to help you understand what each is trying to do and how RPOs are sort of the next evolution of play action. Because in play action, you know the quarterback's never actually going to hand it off, but as the name run pass option suggests, quarterback actually has the option to give the ball to the running back on every RPO. And the key that Chris Collinsworth failed to mention in the broadcast is the offensive line. You know, on run pass options, the offensive line is never going to know if the quarterback hands the ball off or keeps it and then throws. So with that in mind, the O-line has to run block every single time as though the running back is getting the ball, because if they pass protected, you know, they're not going to have those blocks to free up space for the running back. And so you still have wide receivers running routes, you still have potentially tight ends running routes, but that offensive line, they're trying to get downfield, they're trying to make blocks, and they're not staying back in pass protection and not giving away the potential cue of what the quarterback is about to do to defenders trying to read the play. Later on in this episode, I'll explain how Matt Nagy can leverage that and add potentially a third layer of option into the run-pass option when he has Mitchell Trubisky, Jordan Howard, and Tariq Cohen to work with in the Bears' offense. The decision to run-pass really does come down to a read by the quarterback. And for RPOs, there's two different kinds of reads, pre- and post-snap RPOs. So pre-snap RPOs are reads based on the alignment of the defense. And for the most part, it's just a numbers game. You know, if you have three wide receivers to the left side, you're looking to see, you know, if the defense is in zone coverage, they might only move two defenders over there up the line of scrimmage. They might have a deep safety and then two defenders up on them to potentially cover those three receivers. And so pre-snap, you would see three receivers, two defenders. If you throw a quick screen to one of those three receivers and have the other two blocking for them, there aren't enough defenders in the area to bring down the play for, you know, anything but at least a short gain. You're not going to lose yards in that play just from a pure number standpoint. You also see a little bit of a numbers game when the quarterback is reading more a single receiver type side of a formation. If he's got a receiver just like one side of the field by himself with a cornerback opposite him matched up to him, if that cornerback is playing far off, say you got a cornerback 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, that's a lot of space right there for the quarterback to make a quick read, throw, just get the ball in a little flare out, maybe a quick out or even a slant, just something to get him the ball and have that cornerback have to make up that space that he gave up pre-snap. So it's sort of numbers there in terms of separation and numbers in terms of number of defenders compared to number of receivers. So the pre-snap reads on RPOs are a little bit easier for quarterbacks, but sometimes you can take it to the next level and go to more of these post-snap RPO-type reads. These are a little bit more difficult, and you tend to have your quarterback focus on one defender in particular, usually someone in the box or right up at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, as it might suggest, post-snap, you're looking at what that defender does in the time between you snapping the ball and you putting the ball in the hands of your running back. And you'll see sort of that mesh handoff, that two-handed thing, to give quarterbacks even more time to see what this isolated defender is doing. So sometimes you're looking at a linebacker, maybe the linebacker that's initially lined up over your tight end. And if that linebacker on the snap steps up closer to the line of scrimmage to defend the run, he's going to leave that space behind him, kind of like you'd see on a play-action pass, so the quarterback can keep it, throw it to that spot where his tight end might be. Or maybe that linebacker's gotten burned a few times in the same type of RPO-type play, so you snap the ball, and that linebacker stays at his spot and doesn't step up to defend the run. All of a sudden, he's not filling the gap that he would potentially be filling in run defense, and your offensive line is able to get where it wants to be from a run blocking standpoint. And so you give the ball to the running back, you have a more favorable running matchup for your line and your running back versus the defenders in the box, and you've isolated that one player based on what he does post snap, whether he comes up to defend the run or drops back to defend the pass. Whichever one he doesn't do is going to create space either for your running back or for your quarterback to throw the ball. Now, built into this, you can run pre-snap motion to try and make these reads easier for the quarterback. You know, you can bring a receiver across the formation, see if someone follows him for man coverage, or if they kind of pass him off and show zone, or maybe you get the team to roll their safeties where the single deep safety comes down to one side and the other safety that was in the box goes back to be that deep safety, and all of a sudden you have a different strength and a different alignment on your defense. Different numbers in different spots, different players ready to defend different areas of the run, and different distances of defenders to your receivers that might potentially change whether you're going to hand the ball off or throw it and how they might react after the snap. And so you can kind of see now how RPOs are pretty different from play action, despite them sometimes looking similar, and you can see how RPOs are really that much harder to defend. The defense just has to be ready for two different plays on the same play. You know, they can't give receivers extra space or else you're going to hit them on the quick throw. But if they have their defensive backs up on receivers and paying a lot of attention that way, that's taking guys away from the box. That's taking guys away from focusing on the run. And you're limiting defensively the number of guys that can step up and make a play on the running back. And all of a sudden, the offense gets more numbers in terms of blockers to defenders and more space for your running back to make plays and keep that ground game rolling. So as you might imagine, when they've been run properly, RPOs have been incredibly effective this year. I mean, you look at just how the Patriots defense has defended them. They mentioned this in the Super Bowl broadcast, but quarterbacks throwing on RPOs against the Patriots completed 13 of 14 passes for 112 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, we all know the Patriots defense, they have their flaws, and it wasn't a perfect unit by any means, but still, I mean, that is incredible efficiency and some big-time plays for offenses, including the Eagles, that had some success doing that in the Super Bowl. And of course, now the defensive coordinator for the Patriots, Matt Patricia, is now the head coach of the Lions, so there's some reason to believe that next year the Lions could be vulnerable to the RPO. So you might be thinking, okay, RPOs are awesome, and they work really well, but why do I care? Well, as you might expect, the Philadelphia Eagles ran more RPOs than any other team in the NFL this season, again, courtesy of our friends at Pro Football Focus. But do you know what team ran the second most total RPO plays this year? The Kansas City Chiefs, who were coordinated offensively by Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy, of course. So that's why we care about RPOs here on Locked On Bears. I mean, in terms of frequency here, just getting back to our comparison with play action, you remember most teams in the NFL, you know, the play action range here ranges from about 10% to 30% of all passing plays. And you look in terms of how often RPOs were built into the Eagles and Chiefs offense, they were actually at a pretty darn similar pace. Eagles ran more total RPO plays, but also ran more total plays in the regular season. And so both the Eagles and Chiefs ran RPOs on about 16% of their offensive plays. Again, courtesy of Pro Football Focus. I think the Chiefs were somewhere around 170 RPO plays in total. You compare that to the Chicago Bears last year, Bears had 25 total run-pass option plays. That equates to just over 2.5% of their total offensive plays. The NFL average for total RPO plays was about 63. Again, the Bears were down at 25. And actually, in my article on BearsWire, BearsWire.com, on Twitter, at TheBearsWire, of course, I broke down two of those 25 RPOs. And actually, One of them went for a Jordan Howard touchdown, so you definitely want to check that out. But the article also showed you some of the Chiefs' run-pass options and how they were able to make those successful. You know, one of the things Nagy did, he worked different route combinations into the RPOs. They came back to the same run-pass options within the same game. So you make, you know, you show the defense it one time, and they defend it a certain way. You come back to it a second time, and maybe they defend it a slightly different way to adjust to the first time, and so then you adjust the read. You know, whether it's the quarterback seeing something different in the way they do it or running a slightly different route combination, X, Y, Z, you find different ways, you make the defense adjust to you, and then you attack them based on the way they adjust it. It's a very different mindset to be in than Dowell Loggins, who said last year, talking about how Tariq Cohen, the defense did things to take him away, and so they stopped using it. Nagy was much more of the do things to make the defense change rather than letting the defense affect what you do. So it's easy to see how run-pass options can be just a great product in the Chicago Bears offense in the future. They can kind of work it in different layers, especially with Matt Nagy and Oregon's Mark Helfrich helping to run the offense. I'm expecting quite a bit of creativity there. I mean, it helps when you have a quarterback like Mitchell Trubisky that has that mobility. And we saw the Bears do some of that last year with the regular, you know, read option runs. And I want to see Matt Nagy work RPOs and different types of routes off of that read option that we saw was able to be successful in spurts with Trubisky and Cohen and Howard and whoever's going to be back there with him. The way I see it, you can design a set of plays here where you give Trubisky a pre-snap RPO read. You know, whether that's a screen on one side and a quick out on the other or something that says, okay, if we got numbers over here, we throw the screen. If you got numbers over here, you throw the quick ball to Kendall Wright or Jarvis Landry or Calvin Ridley or whoever the other Bears wide receivers are going to be. You work it that way. And if, based on the pre-snap alignment, it tells Mitchell Trubisky to do the running play because none of your receivers are going to be open, then you can make it a read option, a normal zone read handoff type play. And then you've built yourself two options into one play. And, you know, this isn't anything new. This is something the Chiefs were doing already. But I get excited thinking about what Mitchell Trubisky could do with it. So he has the pre-snap read of run pass. And then post-snap, he has the read of read option handoff or read option and keep it. So you're optioning that defender in the line of scrimmage and you're pre-snap optioning the run and the pass. There's really three ways the ball could go on a play like this. Mitchell Trubisky can keep it and throw it based on the pre-snap read. Trubisky can keep it and run it based on the post-snap read of that option defender, or Trubisky can hand it off to Howard or Cohen, and all of a sudden you have three different things for the defense to keep in mind and to handle, and three different ways you can create your own mismatches and get the numbers game going and make things that much easier to move the ball creatively and in innovative ways that we just didn't see perhaps ever in a Chicago Bears offense. So I know what you're thinking. Lauren, why don't they just run RPOs on every play? Why did the Eagles and Chiefs only run it 16% of the time? And it seems like a good idea, and I definitely think teams should run more RPOs and should potentially, you know, get up to the level that play action is at in terms of this sort of 10 to 30% range depending on the teams. But, you know, as effective and just creative as run pass options are, they are limited in the passing game. I mean, because your offensive line here is run blocking, they're trying to, you know, make blocks on defenders and drive those defenders downfield to create that space for the running back. But if the quarterback throws it while the offensive line are downfield, your offense is going to get flagged for an eligible receiver downfield. I don't remember if that's a 5 or 10 yard penalty, but obviously play doesn't work and you're left going back to where you were. And so the quarterback, if he's going to throw it, he has to throw it before the offensive lineman, any offensive lineman, gets a yard beyond the line of scrimmage. And so far, I mean, NFL referees, I mean, everybody has complaints about NFL refs, but they miss a lot of ineligible receiver downfield calls. I don't know if they don't have someone watching offensive linemen long enough to get to that point, but whatever it's been, you watch a lot of RPOs and you'll see offensive linemen 1, 2, 3, 4 yards downfield when the quarterback is still throwing the ball. It should be flagged. I don't think it got flagged nearly enough this year. And maybe as RPOs get more popular, they'll start enforcing that a little bit tighter, and you'll see more ineligible receiver downfield flags. But because the quarterback has to throw it pretty quickly, you're usually looking at under 2 seconds. It's a snap, read, throw type of thing. You're limited in what type of routes your quarterback can target, what kind of routes receivers can run in that limited time frame. It pretty much has to be, you know, a quick slant, a quick out route, or a quick screen. Sometimes they're little flare routes where basically the receiver doesn't move. He just steps and turns, and it's technically like a quick screen without blockers. You know, little things like that, especially on pre-snap RPOs. When you're trying to take advantage of this built-in separation purely from the alignment of the cornerback. You know, if the cornerback is 10 yards off and you snap it and wait, he might get closer to that wide receiver as you wait for the ball to get there. So you got to get the ball to him as quickly as possible so he can take advantage of that built-in separation and that built-in space. And so there's some limit there in terms of downfield passing in an RPO, and there's limits in terms of just different routes that you can get the ball to. So, you know, don't expect the Bears to run RPOs on every play next year, but do expect to see them run it maybe more than 5 times as much as we saw under Dowell Loggins this past year. And also, do expect to hear more in-depth Bears analysis like this on Locked On Bears once again, moving forward with me back as your host. We're back in the swing of things. You know I missed it. I hope you missed it. I'm glad to be back, and I hope you'll keep tuning in and helping us grow here. Tell your friends and your fellow Bears fans about Locked On Bears. Tell them we're back. We're better than ever. We're bringing you Bears analysis through the offseason, and we're here for you, the loyal listener, breaking down that next level Bears analysis. None of the filler, fanboy, anything like that. This is just Chicago Bears football. It's my educated opinion. I'm not going to be right on everything. I'm going to be wrong on a few things, but I hope I'm going to be right a lot more than I'm wrong. And I hope you enjoy listening to these types of breakdowns and getting your fix of Chicago Bears podcasts. I like to try and be the best Chicago Bears podcast out there, and I hope you agree with me. Don't forget, you can find all of our podcast episodes on our website, LockedOnBears.com, and on Twitter at Locked On Bears. You can follow me on Twitter at Cox Sports One. That's COX Sports One. For more daily Bears talk analysis, you can find all that stuff on there. You can reach me on there with any feedback for the show. I'm always have open ears and love to hear from Locked On Bears listeners. It feels good to be back behind the microphone. Hope it feels good to be back in your headphones or however you listen to Locked On Bears, getting you through your commute to the work, whatever it is you do. It feels good to be back. It feels good to remind you to bear down.